All right, welcome back, everyone. Today, we are going to take a deep dive into a topic that is really important, but you might not think about all the time how the aviation industry works so hard to keep flights safe.
Right, and that's even when things go wrong.
Exactly. We're talking about managing threats, errors, those almost accident moments that pilots and everyone in aviation train for. Now, you might be thinking, okay, interesting, but I'm not a pilot. Right. But trust me, the stuff we're going to unpack today is called Threat and Error Management, or TEM. And it's surprisingly relevant to all of us,
For sure.
even if we're just passengers not in the cockpit.
Yeah.
Okay. So think about this. Imagine you're driving in like a crazy downpour. Visibility is terrible. Roads slick. That's your threat right there.
Oh, yeah.
Now you misjudge the distance to the car in front of you. That's your error.
Ooh.
And you have to slam on the brakes, heart's pounding, you avoid a crash.
Wow.
That near miss, that's an undesired state. Thank goodness you averted it this time.
Yeah.
See? TEM concepts, they're all around us.
That's true.
By understanding how they work in aviation, maybe we can all learn to make better decisions in those kind of high-pressure situations in our own lives.
Absolutely.
All right, so we're going to shift gears from our everyday driving adventures and take a closer look at how this TEM model works in the super complex world of flying. I'd love to hear, like, what is it about this TEM model that makes it so fascinating? How does it help those aviation pros think ahead and manage those potential problems before they even happen?
Well, the thing is, the TEM model really flips the focus. You know, it's not just reacting to incidents. It's about proactively managing risk. So it's like, if you can imagine like playing chess, you're thinking several moves ahead. You are trying to anticipate all those potential threats, the errors, and coming up with strategies for how to deal with them before they even become a problem. And to do that, TEM kind of breaks things down, right? Three key parts: threats, errors, and those undesired aircraft states.
So this model suggests there's a chain reaction. Mismanaged threats lead to errors, which then spiral into those like almost accident moments. But are there times when errors happen when there aren't any obvious threats, you know, on their own?
Oh, that is a great question. Well, yeah, the model shows how they're connected, you know, threats, errors, all that. It also says that errors, well, they can happen even when everything seems fine. Like a pilot could make a slip while they're putting data into the flight management system, even in perfect conditions. These slips are often attributed to human factors, so things like fatigue, distractions, or just a simple lapse in concentration.
So the TEM is not just about those external pressures, but also about understanding like what's going on inside the human side of aviation safety. That's really cool. Okay. Let's break down those threats. Our sources talked about like environmental and organizational. What does that actually mean when we're talking about flying?
Okay, so picture this: a pilot trying to land a plane in a sudden thunderstorm, right? That's your environmental threat right there. It's something outside of their control, bumps up the difficulty level immediately. Other environmental threats: you've got turbulence, wind shear, even birds on the runway.
That thunderstorm scenario, that's intense. You mentioned wind shear. For those of us who aren't pilots, what is that and how does it cause problems for planes?
Okay, so wind shear is basically this sudden, dramatic change in wind speed and direction. It can happen anywhere, any altitude, but it's especially dangerous when you're taking off and landing.
Oh, I see.
So imagine a plane approaching the runway, and all of a sudden, boom, strong downdraft hits.
Whoa.
The aircraft could lose lift, making it tough to control.
Wow, that sounds pretty scary. Makes you appreciate the skill, the experience needed to handle situations like that.
Definitely.
Okay, let's talk about those organizational threats.
Right.
They're a little less obvious than a huge thunderstorm, right?
Right.
Our sources mentioned things like air traffic control errors, even call signs that sound similar.
Yeah.
But wouldn't those organizational threats be different depending on the airline? Like, how can a model like TEM, which is supposed to work everywhere, how can it account for all those differences?
Oh, you're right. Those organizational threats can vary a lot. Airlines' culture, safety practices, the rules they work under, all that plays a role. But the cool thing about TEM is that it gives you this framework to find and fix those threats,
I see.
no matter what they look like. For example, a smaller airline that maybe doesn't have as much training, they might have a higher risk of those procedural errors compared to a bigger, more established airline with a stricter training program.
So TEM provides a common language to understand those threats. And then you can tailor the strategies for each airline's specific needs.
Exactly.
That makes sense. Okay. Let's go deeper into these organizational threats.
Right.
Our sources talk about things like operational pressure, so delays, last-minute equipment changes, even those crazy short turnaround times between flights.
Yeah.
That kind of time crunch must be super stressful for the flight crews.
It can be.
How does TEM help pilots manage all that?
Well, you're absolutely right. Those pressures can be intense.
Yeah.
That's where TEM steps in, helping those pilots stay ahead of the game.
Okay.
The model emphasizes planning, communication, and teamwork to manage that heavy workload and to minimize the risk of making mistakes.
Hmm.
For example, during a short turnaround, pilots have to figure out what's most important, delegate, and be crystal clear when talking with ground crew and air traffic control.
So creating a system where they know those pressures exist and they've got strategies ready to go to minimize their impact on safety.
Exactly.
Now, even with the best preparation, errors can still happen, right?
Of course.
We're human. We make mistakes. What are some examples of those errors in aviation, and how does TEM help us understand them?
Well, TEM acknowledges that in any complex system, especially when people are involved, mistakes are bound to happen.
Yeah.
It's not about placing blame.
Right.
It's about understanding how errors occur and what we can do to prevent them.
Okay.
Our sources break down errors into three types: aircraft handling errors, procedural errors, and communication errors.
Okay, let's break those down a little further. Let's start with aircraft handling errors. What kind of slip-ups fall under that category?
So those are actions, or sometimes inaction, that are related to controlling the plane.
Okay.
For example, a pilot could accidentally put the wrong altitude into the autopilot system.
Oh.
And that could make the aircraft stray from its intended flight path.
That wrong altitude thing, that's a little concerning. What's there to prevent that from turning into something dangerous?
That's where those systemic countermeasures kick in.
Ah.
One example is the Terrain Awareness and Warning System, or TAWWs.
Okay.
It's like an airbag, preventing a really bad outcome.
Okay.
It uses radar to see how close the aircraft is to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gives those audio and visual alerts to the pilot, telling them, hey, you need to do something.
So it acts as a safety net.
Exactly.
Alerting the pilot and giving them time to adjust the plane's path.
Exactly.
That's good. What about procedural errors? Those seem like they could be just as dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Procedural errors can be just as risky.
Yeah.
These are when you deviate from those standard procedures. The checklists, briefings, all that.
Okay.
They might seem small, but they can have big consequences.
Yeah.
Imagine a pilot, they miss a critical step during the pre-flight checklist.
Uh-oh.
Like checking the fuel level.
No.
That could lead to a fuel emergency later in the flight.
That emphasizes how important those checklists are.
Yeah.
And even small deviations from those procedures can cause a domino effect.
Exactly.
It's a good reminder that each step has a purpose.
Absolutely.
But even with the checklists and procedures, communication errors can still slip through, right?
They can.
Especially in such a fast-paced, high-pressure environment like aviation.
Yeah.
What are some of those communication slip-ups that happen, and how does TEM help us understand them?
Well, communication is so important in aviation.
Yeah.
It has to be perfect, both inside the cockpit and between the crew and air traffic control.
Yeah.
A missed call-out, misinterpreting instructions, even a language barrier, these can all have cascading consequences.
I see.
Imagine a pilot misunderstanding an instruction from ATC about which runway to use.
Oh, no.
That's a communication breakdown that could have a really bad outcome.
It really shows how vital, clear, concise, and standardized communication protocols are in aviation.
It's like a symphony.
Yeah.
Every single part has to be perfectly coordinated for the whole thing to work.
But even with the best communication and everyone following the procedures, things can still go wrong, leading to those undesired aircraft states we were talking about. Can you give us some examples of those almost accident situations?
Sure. Those undesired states happen when the aircraft is in a position or configuration that makes things less safe.
Okay.
It could be an unstable approach to landing, going too fast for your flap setting, or even lining up for the wrong runway.
Lining up for the wrong runway, that's got to be every pilot's worst nightmare. What's in place to stop that from happening?
Well, that's where the Airborne Collision Avoidance System, or ACAS, kicks in.
Okay.
It uses radar to detect potential collisions between aircraft.
Right.
And if it sees a problem, It gives the pilots those audio and visual alerts.
Okay.
It can even tell them what maneuvers to do to get out of the way.
So even if a pilot picks the wrong runway, ACIS is there as a backup to prevent a disaster. That's some amazing technology. It seems like these systems, like ACIS and TOBOLUS, are really important layers of protection in aviation.
They are.
But they're only part of the picture, right?
That's right. Those systems are amazing tools, but they're only as good as the people using them.
Yeah, that human element is always there.
Exactly. That's where those individual and team countermeasures we mentioned earlier come in.
Right.
Things like clear communication, managing your workload, sticking to those standard procedures.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all crucial to staying safe and preventing those undesired states from turning into something really serious.
So it's this intricate web of factors.
Yeah.
The technology, the human expertise, the procedures.
Absolutely.
All working together to create a safe aviation system.
Right.
We've just started unpacking this, haven't we?
Just scratched the surface.
We've got the core parts of TEM,
mm-hmm.
the different threats and errors pilots face, even talked about those almost accident situations.
Yes.
But I'm ready to hear more about those countermeasures.
Okay.
Those tools, those strategies that keep pilots safe when they're up against those challenges. I'm really curious about how those work in practice.
Oh, yeah. We've got a lot more to cover there.
Perfect. Stay tuned, everyone, because our deep dive into threat and error management, it's just getting started.
Definitely.
Welcome back to our deep dive into threat and error management. Last time, we explored all those different threats and errors that pilots face, even those heart-stopping, almost accident moments.
Yeah.
But now, let's shift gears and talk about countermeasures.
Okay.
Those tools and strategies that help pilots stay safe even when things get tough.
Right.
We talked about two main types, right?
Yeah.
Systemic and individual and team.
Mm-hmm.
Can we dig a little deeper into how those actually work, like in a real situation?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's like having those layers of protection, isn't it?
Exactly. It's a multi-layered approach. Each layer plays a crucial role in stopping those chain reactions we talked about.
Right.
So systemic countermeasures, those are like the built-in safety features of the whole aviation system.
Okay.
Things like sophisticated navigation systems, standardized procedures, and rigorous training programs.
Mm-hmm.
They're working all the time behind the scenes, constantly monitoring and adjusting to keep things safe.
So it's like a safety net that's always there, even if we don't always see it.
Exactly.
That's reassuring.
Yeah.
Can you give us an example of a specific systemic countermeasure and how it works? Like, how does it actually prevent those almost accident moments?
Sure. Let's say a pilot is fatigued and forgets an important step during the descent checklist.
Uh-oh.
A systemic countermeasure, like the ground proximity warning system, GPWS, would step in.
Okay.
It's like an airbag. It would prevent a catastrophic outcome.
Okay, good.
The GPWS uses radar to see how close the aircraft is to the ground and issues those audio and visual alerts warning the pilot to take action.
It's amazing how those systems can kind of compensate for those human errors we all make.
Yeah.
But what about the individual and team countermeasures?
Right.
How do those play out in the cockpit?
Well, those rely on the skills and knowledge the pilots build through their training and experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's the human side of safety.
Yeah.
For instance, good communication is a crucial individual countermeasure.
Right.
Pilots have to be able to convey information clearly and concisely to each other, to air traffic control, and to the rest of the crew.
Yeah.
Especially in those time-critical situations.
So it's not just about speaking clearly, right? It's about active listening, making sure everyone understands, and using standard terms so there's no confusion.
Absolutely, yeah.
What other individual countermeasures are important?
Workload management is another big one.
Okay.
Pilots are constantly juggling so many tasks, monitoring instruments, communicating with ATC, managing fuel, and the list goes on.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be able to prioritize, delegate effectively, and avoid getting overwhelmed, especially when things get intense.
So basically, they're juggling chainsaws while solving riddles, right?
Pretty much.
No pressure. But seriously, that level of multitasking and decision-making under pressure is incredible.
It is.
It's a high-stakes environment, for sure. We've also talked about teamwork. How do those team countermeasures contribute to safety?
Teamwork is absolutely essential in aviation. A well-coordinated crew is much more likely to manage threats effectively,
mm-hmm.
catch those errors before they become critical, and recover smoothly from those undesired states.
Right.
It's all about creating a culture of open communication, mm-hmm. supporting each other, and sharing responsibility for safety.
So it's not just about having two pilots in the cockpit, right?
No.
It's about creating this team where everyone contributes their expertise to make sure the flight is safe.
Exactly.
What are some examples of those team countermeasures in action?
One great example is cross-checking.
Okay.
This is where each pilot independently verifies the other's actions and decisions.
Okay.
Like if one pilot is programming the flight management system, the other pilot double-checks the entries.
Makes sense.
It's a simple process, but it can catch errors early and prevent them from becoming bigger problems.
So it's like a built-in redundancy system, but with human brains instead of computer chips.
Exactly.
What other team countermeasures are important for keeping things safe?
Briefing is another important one.
Okay.
Before each phase of flight, the pilots will discuss the upcoming procedures, potential threats, and what to do if things go wrong.
Like a pre-game strategy session, but for fronting a plane?
Exactly. And make sure everyone's on the same page and mentally prepared.
But those team countermeasures, the cross-checking, briefing, clear communication, they all rely on trust and collaboration, right?
They do, yeah.
Yeah.
Building that trust takes time and effort. That's why airlines invest in crew resource management, CRM training.
Okay.
It focuses on developing those interpersonal skills and creating a collaborative cockpit environment.
It's amazing how much goes into ensuring our safety in the air.
It is.
It's a testament to the skill and dedication of aviation professionals and how well the system is designed. We've explored those individual and team countermeasures, the things that pilots themselves do to stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the systemic countermeasures, those built-in safety features?
Right.
Can you give us a bit more insight into those?
Of course. Remember, those systemic countermeasures are like the safeguards built right into the aviation system.
Mm-hmm.
They include things like those advanced navigation and warning systems, standardized procedures, and rigorous training programs.
Okay.
Think of it as multiple layers of protection all working together.
It's like a multi-layered cake of safety. You've got the technology, the procedures, and the training all working together.
Exactly.
But what happens if those systems fail? It seems like relying only on technology could be a problem if something goes wrong.
That's a great point. And that's why the TEM model emphasizes the importance of human oversight.
Okay.
Pilots are trained to know when those systems might not be working correctly and to take action to stay safe.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about balancing automation with human expertise.
So it's not about blindly trusting technology, right? It's about understanding its limits and knowing when to step in.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Can you give us some specific examples of those systemic countermeasures and how they work in real situations?
Absolutely. One example is the Traffic Collision Avoidance System, or TCS.
Okay.
TCS uses radar to detect potential collisions between aircraft.
Right.
If it senses a conflict, it gives pilots audio and visual alerts and can even tell them how to maneuver to avoid a collision.
So even if two planes are headed towards each other, TCS can help them get out of the way.
Exactly.
That's incredible. What other systems contribute to that safety net?
Another crucial system is the Enhanced Ground Proximity Warning System, or EGPWS.
Okay.
It uses a database of terrain and obstacles to warn pilots if they're getting too close to the ground.
Oh, wow.
It can even tell them how to recover from a dangerous situation.
It's like having a virtual co-pilot who's always on the lookout.
Yeah.
That must be so helpful for pilots, especially when visibility is low or they're flying in unfamiliar territory.
It is.
But I bet those sophisticated systems require a lot of training to use effectively.
They do, yes.
Yeah.
Pilots go through extensive training to understand those systems mm-hmm. and know how to interpret the alerts and instructions.
It's not just knowing which buttons to push,
no,
right?
It's about understanding how those systems work, their limitations, and how to respond appropriately.
It sounds like a constant learning process for pilots, staying up to date with technology and adapting their skills.
It is.
That must be a challenging but rewarding part of the job.
Definitely.
We've covered those systemic countermeasures, the amazing technology working behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the procedures, those standard ways of doing things?
Right.
How do those contribute to a safer aviation system?
Well, those standardized procedures are like the foundation of aviation safety.
Okay.
They provide a consistent framework for how everything is done. Pilots follow predetermined steps for everything from pre-flight checks to emergency procedures.
So it's about taking the guesswork out and creating a process that's predictable and repeatable.
Exactly.
It's amazing how much thought goes into creating these procedures.
A lot of thought goes into it. These procedures are developed based on years of experience, analyzing data, and learning from past incidents.
Mm.
They're constantly being refined and updated to make them even better.
So it's like a living document that evolves over time. That's really impressive.
Yeah.
But these procedures are only effective if they're followed correctly, right?
Absolutely.
How does training ensure that those procedures are ingrained in pilots' minds and actions?
Training is so important in aviation. It's how pilots learn not only the procedures themselves,
right,
but also how to apply them in real-world situations.
Okay.
They practice these procedures in simulators, during flight training, and throughout their entire careers.
So it's not just about memorizing a checklist. It's about understanding why each step is there and how to adapt those procedures if things change.
Exactly.
It's inspiring to see how much effort goes into training these aviation professionals and giving them the tools and skills to keep us safe.
Yeah.
It really shows how committed the entire industry is to safety. We've only explored a small part of what threat and error management is all about, haven't we?
We've covered a lot, but there's still more to explore. In our final segment, we're going to shift our focus from the cockpit to the whole aviation system.
Okay.
We'll see how organizations can proactively manage threats and build a strong safety culture.
Sounds fascinating. Stay tuned, everyone, because our deep dive into threat and error management isn't over yet.
Welcome back, everyone. Mm-hmm. We've spent the last two parts digging into those threats, the errors, the countermeasures, really from that pilot's perspective, right?
Yeah,
but let's zoom out a bit.
Okay.
How do aviation organizations, like, how do they create that safety culture, you know?
That goes beyond just what one person does.
Right.
It's like building this, like, safety ecosystem, isn't it?
Yeah.
But where do they even start?
Well, it really all starts at the top.
Okay.
You need leadership that truly makes safety the priority.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just talking about it. They have to actually do it.
Right.
Invest in those strong safety programs. Encourage people to report errors, even those near misses.
Mm-hmm.
And then making sure everyone has the resources and the training they need to do their job safely, from the CEO all the way to the ground crew.
That makes a lot of sense, that top-down approach. But creating an environment where everyone feels okay speaking up,
right,
especially about mistakes, that can't be easy, right?
It's not.
How do you build that trust?
Well, you're right. It's not easy at all.
Yeah.
It takes a fundamental shift from, like, a blame culture to a learning culture.
Okay.
You need to make it a place where reporting errors, even near misses, it's seen as something good, a way to help improve safety, not something that gets you in trouble.
Right.
When people feel safe speaking up, they're more likely to report hazards and actually help find solutions.
So it's about creating that, like, no blame mentality, right?
Exactly.
But how do you actually do that? It
yeah.
seemed like a huge change.
It is a big change.
Yeah.
One way is setting up those confidential reporting systems.
Okay.
That way employees can report safety worries without being afraid of, you know, getting punished.
Mm-hmm.
Organizations then take that data from the reports to identify trends and proactively make those system-wide changes.
That data analysis part, that seems super important.
It is.
It's like using those almost accident moments as opportunities to learn and make the whole system stronger.
Exactly.
But it's more than just collecting data, isn't it?
Right.
You have to actually do something with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's about analyzing that data, looking for patterns, and then using that information to actually make improvements.
Okay.
To procedures, training programs, even the design of things.
Yeah.
Like, let's say an airline sees a pattern of pilots misinterpreting certain instructions from air traffic control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they can then use that data to reword those instructions or give more training on how to understand them better.
That's a really good example of how data can drive those continuous improvements.
Exactly.
But speaking of training, what role does training play in helping pilots develop those skills we were talking about earlier?
Oh, training is absolutely key in aviation safety.
Yeah.
It's how pilots learn to manage those threats, spot and recover from errors, and build those thinking and decision-making skills they need for safe flying.
I bet those flight simulators are a big part of that, aren't they?
They are.
It's a safe way for pilots to practice those high-pressure situations,
yes,
right?
Sure
to, like, hone their reactions.
Yeah. Simulators are an amazing tool.
Mm-hmm.
They let pilots experience a ton of different scenarios.
Yeah.
From routine stuff to emergencies,
mm-hmm.
all in a safe and controlled environment.
Right.
They can practice procedures, push their limits a bit, even experience those almost accident moments without any real danger.
That sounds like a great way to learn from mistakes without putting anyone at risk.
Exactly.
But training isn't just a one-time thing, is it?
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Pilots have to do regular proficiency checks and go through training throughout their careers.
Okay.
These checks make sure their skills stay sharp and they're current on all the procedures and regulations.
Hmm.
It's a continuous process of learning and getting better.
Right.
Always aiming for that higher level of safety.
It's really impressive the amount of work that goes into training these professionals and building that culture of safety across the entire industry. It shows how dedicated everyone is. But before we wrap up, can we step back and think about the bigger picture of threat and error management? I mean, we've been talking about aviation, but it seems like these ideas could apply to a lot of other areas too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's what's so cool about TEM.
Yeah.
It's not limited to just aviation.
Right.
These ideas, they can apply anywhere. Human performance is really important, from healthcare to nuclear power.
Wow.
Even just driving.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing potential threats, understanding how those errors can happen, and coming up with strategies to lower those risks.
So it's a way of thinking about safety and risk no matter the industry. That's a really important takeaway.
It is.
It makes you realize we can all benefit from understanding these ideas and applying them to how we make decisions.
Absolutely.
Even in our everyday lives.
That's right.
Yeah.
Whether you're a pilot landing a plane or just navigating a busy intersection, being aware of those potential threats, anticipating those errors, and having a plan in place can make all the difference.
It's about being proactive, not reactive, and always trying to improve how we make decisions.
Exactly.
We've explored so much in our deep dive into threat and error management.
I have.
The mix of human factors, the technology, the organizational culture, it all comes together to create a safer aviation system.
Yeah.
And we've seen how these ideas apply in so many different fields, helping us all make better choices and have safer outcomes.
Absolutely.
So next time you're in a tricky situation, think about those pilots. Remember the threats, the potential for errors, and those countermeasures you can use to reach a safe and successful outcome. Stay curious, stay safe, and keep thinking.